Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, January 27th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, some of the most effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and turn any experience of a negative emotion into part of the infallible guidance system that every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's completely free. Click on the link, download the PDF, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have called in and either been stepped through the worksheet process or given powerful testimonials about how the use of the process has improved the quality of their life and experiences and relationships. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you do that, it will let you have access to a completely free and private app once you click on the glowing heart icon. And that app contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often. If you have comments, questions, answers, or testimonials, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. Once you're in the queue, press 1 and it will put a little icon of a hand by your phone number and I'll announce you by your area code and we can have a conversation. This year we're working through the Way of Mastery. I have been doing some work with the blog post that J.M. wrote about in 2010. When someone asked him, what's the difference between A Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery, and where do they conflict? And he said very clearly, if you perceive a conflict in these two very high-level teachings, it will be you that's creating the perception of conflict, because in essence, there is no conflict. And being that these are very high-level teachings, they're going to be speaking to people individually wherever that person is. So as you read and you get an insight on what you read, and you might talk to somebody else about it, and they may not have gotten the same thing. They may have a completely different understanding of that section of the reading. These words will carry a meaning specific for whoever is reading them. Dr. Rice likes to talk about how there is no meaning in a word except for the meaning that gets stimulated in the mind of the person who hears that word. So if we take a look at the as we're reading this or any other wonderful spiritual teaching, if we keep a major part of our energy focused on our own internal experience, if we start to feel upset, tight, tense, judgmental, we can rest assured that that's part of our own baggage that we're bringing into the interaction with that spiritual teaching. So as we read, as we go further, please understand the idea of these conversations and the Christ Mind material is to usher us into an experience that's different from what we've gotten by living life the way we've been conditioned and trained to live it. And in our last segment yesterday, I was reading from the second lesson, and I'd gotten to what I would consider to be the first exercise or practice that there is offered in this pathway. So an exercise or a practice is different than an axiom of truth. The first axiom of truth is very clearly labeled, and it's on the fifth page, and it says, you know, as a way of getting really clear about the messages in the first and second lesson, here's the first axiom of truth. And the first step in this process is to let this thought into your mind. Nothing that I experience is caused by anything outside of me. I experience only the effects of my own choice. My choice of what? My choice of where I'm going to focus my conscious awareness, because my conscious awareness and its focus is literally what creates my experience of life moment to moment. So that's the first axiom of truth. The first exercise that was given is the suggestion that you spend time each day taking a breath, stepping back from whatever you're doing, and reciting this or the essence of this following statement. I have literally created this experience. Something within me is so grand, so powerful, so vast, so far beyond anything that scientists have ever come up with, that I have literally crystallized into the field of experience an awareness of being a body in space and time. It has come forth from the field of my consciousness. It is the gift to me from the Creator, and the Creator asks only that I learn about how I am creating as creation itself creates. So there's my exercise. There's my suggested expenditure of time, once a day or several times a day, whatever I feel called to step back and notice, oh, here I am sitting in my office talking on the internet show. I have created this experience. I have chosen to be here at this time. I have arranged whatever other potential activities in my life around this so I could be here? And as in the example of the garden that it gave earlier, if I plant a garden and all of the plants wither and die, this pathway would have me encourage me to just step up to the wilted, dead garden plants and say, oh, well, this is my creation. I have done this. No one else is responsible. It's not the fault of the weather. It's not the fault of the person who sold me the seeds. This is my creation. And it's fine just the way it is. Now, there's no food here to eat, so I might as well go to the store and get some food so I stay healthy and energized. That's the invitation. And here's the specific exercise. Spend a few minutes, once a day or several times a day or several times a week, whatever you're called to do, pausing in the auto-processing, the automatic thought process that drives us through day-to-day interactions, to notice, I have chosen to be here. I have created the experience of being a consciousness confined to a body. I have chosen to be in this place at this time, whether I'm at work, I'm out at a restaurant with friends, I'm in a store, I'm taking a walk in a forest preserve. The exercise we were given in the second lesson is to just step back and step into the observation of what we have created. As we do that, our experience will change. Accepting 100% responsibility for our experience of life in each moment is what these first two lessons are introducing us to as a possibility and suggesting different ways that we can step into that practice and that realization. The reading goes on to say, likewise, look upon your creations and marvel, just as your Father and the Creator of all life and you looks at you and says, well, look what I created. How could it be that you can place yourself behind the wheel of an automobile and actually get from point A to point B? That is a mystery. Marvel at it. No one knows how it's done, and yet it is done. The reason it is done is that all power has been given unto you, and what you decree is. A man or a woman shall decree a thing, and it shall be so. You have decreed this moment, so own it. By owning it right now, you can begin to sense the incredible and awesome power that flows through you in each moment. It is the power to create. Begin by choosing now to cultivate the practice in this manner. Set the attention so that in each hour of your day, for just 3 to 5 minutes, you practice bringing this quality of awareness to exactly whatever you are experiencing whenever the thought arises to do the practice. What does that thought come from, and where does it come from? Imagine that you're going through the day and you've been hustling and bustling about. You've gone to your office or your work. You've talked to friends. You've bought groceries. You've done all these things, and suddenly the thought appears, oh, I'm supposed to focus on being aware that I am literally the creator of what I experience. Now, do you think that that thought just happened by accident? No. The thought is penetrating your conscious awareness from the depth of your mind that rests right next to the mind of the Creator. Therefore, the power to generate that very thought is the effect of the Creator's will entering into your field of being, penetrating the veils of distraction, and shining forth as the thought, oh, that's right, 5 minutes every hour. Can you feel the awesomeness of that? For you are linked to the mind of the Creator, and the Creator knows how to bring you back to complete freedom, perfect peace, and mastery of this entire realm. Those who truly love creation and would truly awaken will feel something compelling them to master this simple practice for 5 minutes each hour. They will learn to delight in and look forward to this practice. Pretty soon, those 5 minutes will stretch into 6, then 10, maybe 15 or 50, until finally there is established in their awareness the unchanging realization that everything that arises, they have decreed it so, and so it is. 5 minutes every hour is not too much to ask. For 5 minutes every hour, be as you are created to be. What is that? You are a creator decreeing that which brings forth experience. Never again allow yourself to say, well, I'm really here because I have to be. I'm really just doing this because it's what I have to do. Take the words ought, should, must, and have to, write them down on a piece of paper, look at them, then light a match and light the corner of the paper and let it burn. Let it dissolve into dust. This would be a symbol of allowing the energy you have given those words to become again as the dust or the ash of the ground. Clear from your consciousness all identification with such words, for all of them are denials of the true reality. Many times I have shared with you that you need do nothing. Please listen to those words and take them into yourself as though they are your own voice, because in truth they are. I need do nothing. You do not have to survive. Whoever told you that you had to? You do not have to make everybody happy. Whoever told you had to do that? Whoever told you that you could make anybody happy at all? You do not have to abide as a body in time and space. Whoever told you that you had to? You do not have to pay your bills. Who told you that? You literally need do nothing. Now, if you're like me, when you read or heard that last paragraph, the egoic part of your mind was probably screaming, this is gibberish, this is woo-woo nonsense, this is, you know, if I follow this teaching, I'm going to end up living on the street as a bum, and of course I have to pay my bills. And yet, what this teaching is pointing out to us is we can create an experience of having to pay our bills. We can create experience in life. We do it all the time. And at the same time, we create that experience that we have to do this and we have to do that and we have to go to work and we have to pay our bills. There are all kinds of people who don't go to work. They have a job and all of a sudden one day they decide, I'm leaving, I'm not doing that anymore. They have bills that they've paid regularly and they've got good credit rating and they walk away from it and they quit paying their bills. Some of them just disappear into the wilderness. Some of them go buy a trailer and go living and let, you know, somebody else deal with all of the legal system and repossessing their property or whatever. So the fact of the matter is people do walk away from those responsibilities on a regular basis. This teaching is not telling you to walk away from any responsibilities. It's asking you to observe the truth. You are creating the thought, the pressure on yourself, the conclusion that you need to do this and you should do that and you have to do that and you should please that person. And as you step into the realization that you are the one creating all of the attachment that you have to those thoughts, you are the one creating all of the emotions and all of the pressures you feel in response to those thoughts, it is life-changing. When you realize when you get up in the morning at a certain hour so that you can have some nutrition, get some exercise, take a shower, and head to work on time, when you realize what this paragraph is talking about, you realize you're choosing to do that. And that in itself changes your experience of doing that thing. Remember earlier in the first lesson he was talking about how many women have given birth to a child and been filled with joy and excitement. Many other women have given birth to a child and been filled with terror, thoughts of inadequacy, thoughts of fear and confusion because they don't know what to do or how to support the child. Our experience, moment to moment, day to day, breath by breath in this world, is created by how we choose to focus our thought energy, our mind energy, our consciousness. So please hear this very clearly. This is not a book that's telling you how to live your life. It doesn't say renounce all money and walk away from all obligations. That's not what it is saying. It's asking us to recognize the truth is we need to do nothing. We create the thought that we need to do this or that. This book in a number of other places acknowledges that whatever we choose will have its consequences. When we choose to focus our mind energy on negative thoughts, we have a negative experience. When we choose to focus our mind energy on positive thoughts, we have a positive experience. If we walk away from our job and we stop paying our bills, we will have one kind of an experience. If we go to work because we think we have to and we dread it, but we're going to put our nose to the grindstone and make it happen, we're going to have a different kind of experience. If we get up in the morning and we say, I'm choosing this life, I've chosen to be here, I've chosen this job, I'm going to joyfully go and deal with whatever arises to the best of my ability, I will have an entirely different experience. Even though it might look to someone on the outside as I'm just like every other person who slogs off to work every day, who makes good on his or her commitments. It may look the same from the outside, and yet my internal experience will be radically different if I wake up to the realization that I need do nothing, and I am choosing everything I do. I might be choosing to do going to work and living up to my responsibilities because I've decided that the cost, consequences, the reverberations from others are too negative and I don't want to put up with them. I don't want to experience them. But it's still my choice. And what this teaching is driving us to understand is that we do have the ability. There are people on a regular basis that choose not to go to work. There are people on a regular basis that choose to stop living. There are people on a regular basis that choose to stay in a difficult relationship. And there are people on a regular basis that choose to leave a relationship or a marriage or a job. So I hope that's clear, because many times when we get to this section of the book, it stirs up tremendous resistance in people's minds. And there are people who believe that this book is telling them, drop everything and walk off into the wilderness. And that is not what's being talked about. So the book goes on to say, it's quite different than wanting or choosing to do something. You do not need to love your parents. You do not need to honor your father and your mother. You do not need to worship the Creator or love anyone, even Yeshua. You do not need to love yourself. You literally need do nothing. Because need is an expression of the perception that there is something you lack. And because you are one with all of creation, there is never a moment that you lack anything at all. So, can you allow the thought to emerge in the mind when you arise in the morning that I need do nothing? I don't have to get out of this bed. I don't have to go into an office. I do not need to fulfill that order. I don't need to say good morning to my mate. I literally need do nothing. For how can there be the power of freedom to choose and to create when you're being governed by the belief of the world that you must be a certain way? The belief that you need to be acceptable to others. The belief that you need to conform and fit in. That you need to dress the way others dress. That you need to be committed to surviving an extra day upon this plane. There can be no freedom where there is need. So that's the point. This is simply a shift in perspective. You can choose to live your life tomorrow exactly the way you did today, living up to all the responsibilities, saying mostly all the same things, doing mostly all the same actions. And yet if you understand this perspective and this shift in your perception, your experience of it will be dramatically different. You will awaken to the realization that you have chosen everything that you're experiencing and doing. And it will be more like the joy of total freedom. Whereas yesterday and the day before that, it might very well have felt like slavery. You might have been feeling compelled. You might have been feeling the drudgery of the yoke of responsibility. And yet, you can, as I said, you can be fulfilling all of the same actions, most of the same words, and have a dramatically, life-changingly different experience of it if you understand, if you let yourself observe that you need do nothing. You are literally, actually choosing to do what you do, to be where you are, and to experience what you experience. So, the book goes on to say, practicing the first two axioms. So these are the first two axioms of the way of the heart, to be built on and to be remembered and to be cultivated daily. They're encapsulated in the following. I am created as creation created me to be. I am free. And nothing creates or sources my experience but me in each moment. Nothing has an effect upon me whatsoever except for that which I choose to allow to affect me. I need do nothing. So I'll read it one more time. This is the first two axioms collapsed into one saying. I am created as the Creator created me to be. I am free. Nothing creates or sources my experience but me in each new present moment. Nothing has an effect on me whatsoever except that which I choose to allow to affect me. I need do nothing. Nothing has an effect on me whatsoever except for that which I choose to allow to affect me. I would share with you right now that this morning, as I was preparing to go to work, it came to me very strongly over and over in various ways of stating it. And the bottom line is, it's down to a one-liner. And the one-liner is this. Please take no offense, even if it's offered. Please don't take offense, even if somebody comes at you intending to offend you. It can be offered, but you don't have to take it. Most of the time, people take offense even when none was intended. Every time that people take offense to an action, a word, the unfolding of life on the planet, a hurricane, a robbery, even when people take offense and they have what they would call good reasons for it, they have chosen to take offense. So what's recommended in this pathway is, please don't take offense even if somebody offers you offense. Even if somebody does something that you would consider to be offensive, please don't take offense, because you're the one that creates the experience of being offended. And if you settle into these first two axioms, and if you understand that nothing that comes out of another person talks about anything or anyone other than that person, whatever actions a person does, whatever comes out of a person's mouth, is only always and forever going to teach you about what's going on inside that person. So if somebody comes up to you and offers offense, feel free to let it lay there and not take it. Please don't take offense, even if it's offered to you. So one more time, the first two axioms are summarized in this way. I am created, Creator created me to be. I am free. And nothing sources my experience but me in each moment. Nothing has an effect on me whatsoever except for that which I choose to allow to affect me. I need do nothing. I do not need to take offense, even if somebody comes up to me and says and does things which they hope will be offensive. I don't need to pick it up. I don't need to register it. I don't need to respond to it with defensiveness or offense in any way. The book goes on to say, in the beginning, we would suggest that you practice this second axiom in the morning and in the evening as you are arising and as you are retiring. The second axiom is, I need do nothing. At least twice in each of your days, we would ask you to cultivate for 5 minutes the repetition of this thought so that you feel it in your bones. I need do nothing. It will come as quite a shock to your consciousness. The mind will say, oh, wait a minute, I have all these things I have to do. What about this? What about that? Oh my goodness, will the world stop spinning if I stop needing? The point is, that's up to the world. It's not up to you. The power of these first two axioms will be that everything that follows is built upon it. Yet everything that follows is merely a way of watering these two axioms and making them the anchor of your awareness. For when the anchor is firmly in place, you will literally create whatever you so desire, perfect freedom and perfect deliberateness. You will even transcend miracle-mindedness. For miracle-mindedness is still a stage of perception just short of mastery. Mastery comes when you know that you are literally and deliberately creating. There is nothing miraculous about it. You will decree a thing, and it will be so. That is to create as the Creator creates. For the Creator marvels at you. The Creator knows perfectly well that your creation was not a miracle. It was very deliberate, born from the pure radiance of the energy of creation that most call love. The Creator does not sit on a throne and say, "I wonder if I'm worthy to create my children. I wonder if I'm worthy to express myself through the divine spark of consciousness that they are." Never does it enter the holy mind of creation, quote, "I wonder if it's okay if I create a solar system," close quotes. The Creator receives a thought, or a thought emanates within its holy mind, and it decrees it, and it is so. And it looks upon all things, and as we talked about yesterday, the phrase that we say in English is, "It is very good." What that means is, this is what it is, with all of the ramifications of it. It's okay, it's just fine, just the way it is. It's not judging it as good or bad, it's the acknowledgement at a much deeper level that life is this flow of creative energy extending in time and space and outside the realm of time and space. And it's okay just to accept it as it is. So, there's another exercise in this lesson. I will save that for tomorrow. I will suggest that people raise comments, questions, answers, refutations, poems, songs, soliloquies, 563-999-3581. Call that number. Press 1. Let us know what's on your mind today. How can we be of service? We have about 18 minutes left on the first hour of our call before somebody, hopefully Michael and Jeannie, come to take on the second hour. Our call-in number one more time is 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1 and let us know what's on your mind. I had the honor last night of being on a webinar with Dr. David Grand talking about trauma as a process and potential solutions for it. I am hopeful to be able to offer that in the not-too-distant future. It was recorded. And tonight is a Thursday, so there will be a support group tonight available on Zoom. If you or someone you know would like to join us, it's from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. All the information needed to join us in that meeting is available on mindshiftersacademy.org. And there's a separate page for the Thursday login, separate from Tuesday, so please be clear about that. We've had some people who tried to join us on a Thursday night, but they were using the number to join on Tuesdays, and it didn't work so well, and vice versa. And I will once again say, since no one has a hand up, that there's an open invitation out here for comments, questions, testimonials related to this work. Also, an open invitation for you to send us a list of your favorite books, your favorite authors, your favorite podcasts, inspirational, educational from a psychological or emotional perspective. I am involved in several different projects. One of them is the On Your Mind podcast for Journey's Dream. And I'm always looking for suggestions for other books to read, other authors to interview, other inspirational teachers to either bring on the Mind Shifters Radio as an interview or to interview for the On Your Mind podcast for Journey's Dream. So you can either call and 563-999-3581 and press 1 and give us those suggestions, or you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and I will gladly explore your recommendations and suggestions. So, how can we support you today? What's resonating with you from the first two lessons? What resonates when you hear a message like, I need do nothing? What part of your mind wants to scream at the computer or the phone that you're hearing that through because you've been conditioned so thoroughly all throughout your life that you have to do this and you should do that and you ought to do that? As Guy Finley would say, there's a mechanical level of mind in each one of us that just keeps churning out whatever's been programmed into it. And for most of us, it's the opposite of the message, I need do nothing. So area code 760, you're in the air. Who do we have?
Hey, this is Ann down in Florida. So definitely relating to this morning. I laid in bed and said, I can just keep laying here or I can't get up. And it's like the thought was, well, I'm going to stay here and do nothing. But I'm sore from yesterday's workout. And I go, so my choice was to get up because I didn't want to waste the soreness, right? I wanted to move around more. So it got me up. But it was going to be almost time to turn on the radio show, so I'm glad I did. On the book note, I started reading, I just randomly, it's, you know, one of those little God things, started reading My Stroke of Insight again that I've had, Jill Bolte Taylor, and it's like, you know, it's hard to put it down. I have all kinds of notes and on the side margins and underlining because I remember at the time mentally I was going through some stuff and her suggestions of recovery that she was going through because of her, I'm going to call it an aneurysm, that caused the stroke was things I needed from other people. But of course, now I've done, you know, working on Michael's work, so it's like, okay. Nobody needed to do anything for me. But so I picked it up and I go, oh, I remember that section, but I wanted to go back and get, you know, the whole beginning thing. It's really grueling to listen to her. I remember the first time I read it, it's like, is she ever going to get help? You know, because she, as a brain scientist, was kind of taking this all in about how her brain was functioning and defunctioning, starting to, you know, be less functional. But it, where I read already, which is not quite halfway through, there's so much that is related to Michael's work because she talks about the perception, you know, and that she's creating. So it made me think of her. So my question is, have you ever considered interviewing her and maybe for Journey's Dream just because, you know, it's a whole mental health thing as well?
Well, I haven't. I will put it down as something I'll reach out to her and see. What's happened several times in the past 2 years that I've been doing this podcast for them is that when I reach out to somebody who is that successful and has been on the big shows, they ask, well, so how many listeners can you guarantee us, and what's the size of your podcast? And then when they find out that we're just starting up and we have a very small following, they say no. But I will make a note, and I will find out, because I certainly benefited from that book and benefited from her TED Talks. So that's a great suggestion. Thank you. I will follow up.
Yes. I'm going to finish that. It just kind of goes along with what now and this morning's lesson. And yesterday when I was in the car, I was listening and I was parked. So when it said to just, you know, observe what's going on with your body, what's going on, and I did that, and it's like, so I wasn't doing anything for anybody. I was just sitting there in my car, and I was getting ready to eat my protein bar after I worked out. So it's like, okay, I can do this. So it's really kind of cool to just observe. And like, there was noise, there was traffic going by, and then what's going on inside my body, right? And it's just kind of like, well, my heart's beating, and you just start to be more aware.
Well, and my experience with these exercises is that the more I do them, the more they change, and the more my experience of it changes. So whatever I started experiencing when I first said, okay, I'm going to, you know, take 5 minutes every hour and just wake up and realize, okay, I have chosen to be here. I'm creating this experience. I had one level of experience, but a month or two later, I'm doing the same exercise, and it's radically different. And sometimes, you know, I have resistance to doing it, and sometimes it's just as easy as the next breath, and I just notice, okay, why is sometimes it's very easy to do that, and why is sometimes I have strong resistance? And that's what we're being called to do. Just do it and see what happens. There's no right or wrong to it. Your response isn't supposed to be this way or that way. It's just, you know, it's ways to take steps on the path.
Yeah. Somewhere back a while, I had read something about just taking 3 minutes every hour just to stop whatever you're doing. And so it's kind of like that same kind of thing, like just breathe, and it's almost like it's giving your body a rest. Like, it doesn't have to do anything. It just is. So when I apply that to my clutter, I'm choosing to create my clutter. Would that be close to?
No, that's not close. That's the center of the target. That's an absolute bullseye. That's just 100% what this teaching is. If I have clutter, I've chosen the clutter. If I have neatness and fastidiousness, I have chosen to be neat and fastidious. If I have confusion, I've chosen the confusion. If I have anger, I've chosen the anger. If I have gratitude, I've chosen the gratitude. The list is inexhaustible. Whatever we can create, we will experience. Whatever we experience, we have created it. That's this teaching.
So I can create something different. I don't even have to call it clutter. Okay. That makes it simple. But I know. I and others, I've heard, we tend to complicate things, so. Okay.
Well, you know, you just said maybe you could call it something else, and it reminded me of one of my favorite lines from the Mirror Theory book, where Betsy is saying she's fighting against teachings just like this, and she says, but Charlie, what am I supposed to do about all my garbage history? You know, she's just sick of the early life abuse she went through and the mistakes she's made and all that. She calls it her garbage history. And her teacher, Charlie, says, well, to begin with, let's give it a name with more accurate description and reverence. Why don't we call it the love of God in search of self?
Oh, wow. Right. Okay.
Well, see how transformative that is. If you think about everything you've been through in your life as your garbage history, or you think about it as the love of the Creator expressing in search of itself. Learning about life, learning about its true nature. The love of God in search of self. That's a whole different flavor of energy as a label, and therefore as a creative mind energy, than my garbage history.
Yeah. So that's like looking at things that happen as gifts rather than, you know, a negative comment about, oh, my God, I did it again. You know,
exactly.
And say, what do I have to learn from this? Or, wow, that's pretty cool. I mean, I'm getting better at that, but it takes a lot of work. And I guess it's because we have always been taught and or created the negative. Either, like in Michael's work, it's been around us. We grew up with it or, but there's no blame anymore. I just need to recognize, oh, okay, so I can look at it differently. Yeah, I like looking at it, something as a gift, much better than condemning it. Oh, keep doing what you're doing. I really appreciate it. I wasn't familiar with the Way of Mastery, so I am, glad that you're doing it. Thank you.
I'm glad you like it. It's just the very beginning.
Yeah, but I like what you said, though. What you're getting across in this lesson is the pathway opens for the rest of it. So I can see it's important.
Yeah, it says it's the anchor, and everything is built upon this.
Yeah.
Because if at any point in time in a day, you forget that you are the creator of your experience, you're still creating, but now you're creating, as Michael Rice would say, you're creating unconsciously.
Yes. So we are, creating unconsciously when it's like I'm thinking. I wonder if it's like, when Jill was talking about when she thought in her mind that she was saying something out of her mouth when it actually came out gibberish because of what was, the blood flooding through her brain and closing down different sections. But so I wonder if unconsciously that's what we're doing, right? We think we're saying one thing. Actually comes out. Well, then it depends on where the other person is, right? How it gets received. On any given moment, right?
Well, you're breaking up a little bit, so say that again.
So whatever we think we're speaking, it can, and the other person is receiving it, all depends on where they are to receive it. So we can be thinking we're saying one thing, and it comes out to somebody else different.
Yes.
So then it just goes back to us. But it's not our responsibility how the other person takes it, right?
That's correct. Not only is it not our responsibility, but we have no influence over it. Other than our general influences as part of creation and our choice to choose love and teach only love, which has a ripple effect but the other person has full freedom in each moment, just as we do, to reject that and choose something else. Every one of us is infinitely free in each new present moment to choose a different focus for our conscious awareness, and it's the focus that we choose for our conscious awareness in each new present moment which creates our experience of life.
Amen. There you go. Okay. Thank you. Have a blessed day. It's been great.
All right.
I'm
grateful for the call. Thank you. Blessings. Perhaps I wasn't clear, so Jeannie was asking in the chat room, what's the webinar last night? It was the first of what they're hoping to be monthly webinars leading up to the second annual Integrative Mental Health Summit. And you can go to integrativementalhealthsummit.org. as a website and get more information. You can also go to journeysdream.org and check out links there. Journeys Dream has been creating its own social media platform specifically for people who don't want to talk about personal issues on Facebook or Instagram or LinkedIn or whatever, and this is where people can get support for their mental and emotional health. And so it's Amity, A-M-I-T-Y, and you can find out about that on journeysdream.org. And hopefully every month leading up to the next Integrative Mental Health Summit in October, there will be another hour and a half webinar on a topic that people have asked for. And as I mentioned earlier, when the recording for last night's webinar becomes available, I will talk about it here and make sure it gets in the notes for the show that day and share it as often as I can. So I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I just wanted to get that correct in the notes for today. Appreciate you.
Blessings. Have a great show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Thursday, January the 27th, 2022. And our calling number is 563-999-3581. And press 1. That puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we'll give Michael a moment to get dialed in. Oh, he's with us. Welcome, Michael.
I am dialed in, yes. Thank you, dear heart. And everybody, welcome. Delighted that you're here to step up the conversation one more notch as we move forward, looking into these profoundly life-changing tools that come out of the first century Aramaic language. And lots of things happening. We'll be announcing a radio show we'll be doing, and thank you to Julie Matthews. She had connected with a woman out in Utah who I guess has been doing a radio show for over four decades, although when we talked to her, she sounded like she was a kid. She said, yeah, I got 40 years in my archives. It's like, well, wait a minute, you can't have that with this voice, but she did in any event. So we'll keep you posted when that's going to happen. And, you know, there's lots on our website, of course. You can go to our YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube and put in Michael, R-Y-C-E, or you can go to whyagain.org. And on the right hand, well, actually, I'm not sure where it is on the new layout of the page, but you'll see the social media links. Click our YouTube page. I don't even know. Do you have any idea, Jeannie, how many videos are on the YouTube page at this point? I know it's many dozen, but I don't know just how many. Is your mute button on, sweetie? Are you busy off doing something else already? She's probably got a list. Anyway, you can go to our YouTube channel.
I was on something else and couldn't get back over to my screen to unmute myself.
That's okay. I
have no idea how many videos are out there.
I know. One of these days we'll have to go out and count them and just get an idea what's there. I know we've put a bunch up and probably a few more that we could be putting up too. So anyway. So we're delighted to share it with you. It's an honor and a privilege to have the opportunity and to just move forward this understanding. There's this physicist that lived 2,000 years ago. Some people call him a theologian. Probably one of the biggest mistakes the world has ever made was to call this man Yeshua a theologian, because all of a sudden everything that he taught, it's neuropsychology, it's the in-depth psychology, it's the most profound psychology I'll ever see. There's genetics there, there's physiology. It's mind-boggling. If you take him out of that niche, you know, it's interesting. Albert Einstein says, the theory you have about a thing determines what you can observe. If you take Yeshua, I mean, right down to his name. His name wasn't Yeshua. Or pardon me, his name wasn't Jesus. That's what they call him. Jesus is Hail Zeus, Jesus. You know, they had this rabbi, or that's what they called him. But he wasn't officially a rabbi. He was a teacher. People called him that. And, you know, if you were moving into the Greco-Roman world 2,000 years ago, you probably wouldn't have a whole lot of luck selling the teachings of a rabbi. So Jesus became the option. And if you look at the words, it's Hail Zeus. Everybody knew that God and that religious figure. And if your theory about the man is that he's a theologian and it's about theology, then you're going to miss a whole lot of life-changing, profoundly brilliant teaching and understanding of just exactly how the mind works, who we are as human beings, and how the whole game functions. And so that's what we're here to put forward, to understand this theologian because he does mention the Creator. We could make that one small category of his work. You know, the theory you have about a thing. If you have a theory and you approach him with brain cells that this is about theology, then you'll tend to hear all about theology. The brain cells I had, the theory I had about life, you know, my early work was in the realm of electronics with a side study in physics. So I approach everything, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that. I approach everything with the theory in mind of energy systems and physics. And so when I first encountered the teachings of Yeshua as an adult, not the religious presentation that limits our understanding, but when I approached it as an adult, what became clear to me from the brain cells I had in physics, the theory I was able to posit in that regard, was to see the profound teachings he had in the world of physics. You know, with the naturopathic studies, the physiology, profound stuff about physiology, you know, probably one of the most important pieces of information that, well, not the most important. Yeshua actually answered the question as to what was most important, and that had to do with the mind. Didn't have to do with loving your neighbor, didn't have to do with loving God, or didn't have to do with loving yourself. You know, when they said, what's most important in the law, the Greeks tell us, he said, love God, love neighbor as self. Not even close. But if you have that theory about it, that's what it'll seem. Well, there you go. And you'll notice how many millions of people in today's world proclaim to follow him and follow him dearly and sweetly and totally and completely. And yet they support hate and rage and fear and revolution and insurrection. It's just, you know, it's amazing. But the theory you have about a thing limits what you can see. So when you look at that question asked, what's most important, the answer was about the mind. But if you have a theory, it's about loving somebody, and theology, you miss it. But probably one of the other most important statements that he made that anyone could understand, if they could understand the physics of it, if they could understand the physiology of it, their whole view, their whole theory about the man would change. And all of a sudden, a whole different picture clicks into view. In other words, a perceptual mind can teach us and show us something else out of what he offered. And that one is, and this one scares a lot of people because it's got two really big trigger words in it for most people. We're going to bring up death, and we're going to bring in sin. Boy, that sin and death stuff, that arouses a lot of insanity in people. But if you listen to the Aramaic translations, what the Greeks told us, he said, he didn't say in the Greek context that as it's generally presented of God's going to get you for your sins, he's going to kill you, so the wages of sin is death. If people only understood that was physiology, and that the word sin in Aramaic is an archery term that means off the mark. If you picked up a bow and arrow on an archery course and you fired at the target and you missed the target, the scorekeeper would yell sin, i.e. you're off the mark. It would actually be kind of positive feedback, like take another shot. So if people understood that was physiology, that if they engage in energetic patterns that are off the mark, and the main ones, you know, some of them, you know, we talked the last couple of days, I suggest everybody watch the documentary on YouTube called Foodgate. If they understood that it was about food, that you actually have to take in energetic structures through your mouth, just like through your mind, that are meant for you. Things spiced up with sugar and salt and fat and rancid oils, caffeine, blue dye number, whatever. Those things, literally in the Aramaic sense, are sin. They're energies that are off the mark. And when you realize that, then you start recognizing that you need to put in your mouth what is designed to go in your mouth. Else it will kill you. And watch Foodgate. I mean, they lay out the scam of how people have been conned into believing things are food that aren't food and how many millions of lives. In fact, he talks and documents about how, and I talked about this the other day, you know, the old man and old woman disease of diabetes and liver failure are primarily alcohol-related diseases or sugar-related diseases and fructose-related diseases. But the alcohol, sugar, and fructose industry have gone to work and make people believe that this is actually food and it should be in everything they eat. And it produces death, massive, massive death. If one recognized that this structure called the body-mind unit is designed to incarnate love. That's the primary energy that it's designed for, and energies that are less than that, which are the kind of the normal energies of the culture. You know, we talked the other day about thought terrorists, people who terrorize themselves and others. And some thought terrorists, you know, on the surface, they get smiley. Everybody thinks they're wonderful and would never say poop unless they had a mouth, even if they had a mouthful of it. And yet they go around with a smile on their face continuously at every little trigger where they're not being pleased, where someone's not doing everything they want them to do, producing every result they want. The terrorist thoughts in their minds, they sometimes rarely let it out of their mouths. In extreme frustration, you'll see them screaming in rage. But most people would go, what a nice person. They have no idea what's going on under the covers. That's sin. Physiology. that hurts our bodies when we're not willing to deal with that responsibly and stop terrorizing ourselves and others, even if we never say a word. The terrorism takes its toll in one's own body because those terrorist thoughts are off the mark. They're energies that don't belong. You know, the arrow flew toward the target and missed the bullseye, and the scorekeeper yelled, "Sin." If you don't say a word to that person who, God, if they'd only obey you, if they'd only do what you want them to, everything would be okay. If that goes on inside of you, even though you keep a smile on your face, you're destroying yourself. The wages of sin is death. This is not theology. It's got nothing to do with God. It's got to do with how we live as human beings, and we die. We've got to stop doing this to ourselves if we actually want health and well-being. And if you've been doing it and you're going to stop, then you're going to go through a time period where things are going to be kind of rough because you're going to have to go back through and undo what never belonged. How many times could you have been in screaming, raging fits, or how many times were you, but love was not present in you and you didn't know how to bring it present? Oh, maybe you sat in church and heard somebody talk about it all, but then when you got home, where the thought terrorists were operating, maybe it was your children, maybe it was your parents, maybe it was your spouse, maybe it was yourself. All of that is going to have to be faced, dealt with, and removed. And the tool of removal, here's another big con job that happened with the Greeks. Is the Greeks told us that forgiveness is about how I'm going to let you off the hook because I'm terrorizing myself with my thoughts and I'm in pain. And I believe that you caused my pain. When do I give that up and start to grow up and become an actual adult? Oh, I'm in frustration. I'm in rage. I'm in fear. I want to scream. I want to shout. I want to control. I want to fight. I want to attack. When do I give that up? Because all of that energy is an attack on my own body. So the man had a solution for that. He knew exactly how all of that worked. You have a temple. Your temple's designed for one energy and one energy only, and that is to incarnate love. That's it. It's not designed for anything else. And so once one recognizes what they're doing to themselves, and of course there's this game of blame that most people play, it's all everybody else's fault. We need to remember and recognize that perception is a skill. You know, the perceptual output of the mind is a skill. It's an image-making capability that we made up. With this tool, the mind constructs its world and a false self to match what it's been trained through many generations is familiar. It seems desirable and true. Like if you hold that you're not good enough, then what's desirable and true is to be treated like you're not good enough. And if somebody treats you well, it'll raise your stress level because you'll have to start to look at the thought disorders that have locked you into that pattern that's so familiar. And you'll notice the similarity between the word familiar and family. The only actual feature that's demanded by the skill called perception is that it is familiar. It has to fit the family narrative and keep us locked in the role which has been assigned to us by our history. Now, that role might be painful, degrading, abhorrent even. But what people don't realize is they claim it. It's my identity. I can remember working with a guy. There was a physician in South Florida I used to do a lot of work with. And unfortunately, he moved to New Zealand. In any event, there was a client of his that he had been working with for some time that had cancer, a client friend. And this man had cancer, but his disease was not physical. And this physician friend of mine knew it, and he asked if I would work with him. And I said, sure. That was back when I did private work. And I did several sessions with him, and we got down to the point where this man realized that he created his cancer with his own rage and self-terrorism. I mean, he literally confronted that face to face. And then when I said, okay, so here's how we get rid of it. It's like, no, I don't want to get rid of it. I said, wait a minute, you got cancer. You say you want to get, well, yeah, I'd like to get rid of cancer, but if I get rid of this, if I change that, then I won't be who I am. It was like his red badge of courage. It was his identity. He died of cancer. I went back to my friend Bruce. It's like, you know, we've been working on it. And Bruce is like, Michael, I told him the same thing. But it was his precious identity. And he didn't want to give it up. When those familial things happen, no matter how degrading or abhorrent it is, they're desirable. So this persona, in the Greek language, the word persona, personality, means mask. It's totally false. It's a fraud. It's literally an internally generated self. And if you go back and listen to Yeshua, he said that self has to die in order for the true self to live, in order for there to be room for being to come into this form, in order for the created love that we are to come into this device that's designed for love, that which is based in hostility or fear, the old family patterns have to be removed. They have to be faced. If we accept that false identity, the assignment that was given to us by our family system, it can take a tremendous amount of effort to overcome it. Now, this internally generated structure of the mind, this internally generated perception, hey, it comes complete with color, sound, emotions, literally a whole world, and we substitute that world of perception for the actual experience in any given moment that's being presented by life. So there's an actuality that we live in. And this learned skill called perception structures a world out of its content, and it's like it puts it right up in front of the screen. You know, you ever sit and watch TV, and somebody walks in the room and stands in front of the TV, and you're trying to see it, and you're trying to watch it, and you're like, hey, get out. It's exactly what the ego does. That's exactly what this non-being perceptual construct is. It puts it in front of the world so you can't see it. And most people are so used to that that they don't even know that behind what they think they see, the perceptual constructs generated, behind that, they don't even know there's a world based in love to be experienced directly. Now, why would anybody tolerate such a fraud? Again, I offer it's because it's more familiar and desirable. You know, after all, I made this rage-based, fear-based, greed-based, control-based self. I made it myself, so it must be perfect. And believing it's perfect, this technique of substituting a false-generated persona becomes a substitute for the direct experience of love, becomes acceptable. Few people are aware of it. Even fewer would admit it. But virtually everybody lives in a reality of their own making. Now take that theory to Yeshua and start to read him in the first century Aramaic language, and you're going to get a whole different picture. I was sharing some of this with Jeannie this morning, and I'm thinking this is part of a new book piece that I'm working on. And she had gotten an email with a quote from Winnie the Pooh. And the quote, I mean, it fit perfectly with what we were talking about. The quote is, Winnie the Pooh says, "Hello, Rabbit. Is that you?" Rabbit replies, "Let's pretend it isn't and see what happens." most people forgot they were pretending. Take that theory to the teachings of a man named Yeshua, and now you've got a foundation from which to understand, to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear exactly what he was talking about. And he wasn't talking about theology. He wasn't talking about dogma. He wasn't talking about doctrine. Actually, he makes a pretty clear statement why he was there. Now, recognize, and if you've never had the experience, go hold a newborn child and tap into the essence of that newborn, and you'll notice that the newborn is purely, totally, completely the presence of love. And love, not the verb. The newborn isn't loving you. The newborn is love. That's what you are, and that's what's designed to incarnate in your structure. And when you realize that, then you realize that everything else has to be forgiven, removed. Not, you know, forget this idea of letting everybody else off the hook for what's happening inside of you. Remove what never belonged. And stop pretending like a rabbit that you're what you're not. See what happens. Everything changes. And we're here to support, inspire, teach, understand, learn. You know, as I love what Richard Bach says, we teach best that which we most need to learn. Here I am 50 years later still teaching it, so I must still need to be learning it, which I am, on levels I never could have imagined. And so we're honored and delighted to be having this conversation, and you are here involved. And we'd love to hear from you if you have a thought, a question, an answer, an idea. Our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you push 1, we'll be having a personal conversation. And I would love to have a personal conversation with you. We are here to make ourselves available, particularly to support and assist everyone, including ourselves, in building the brain cells and having the eyes to see and the ears to hear what real healing means, and to, in an ongoing way, continue that conversation and that process. You will not find many places you can have an ongoing daily conversation about what healing looks like. Oh, you can go to the doctor, and the doctor can go check, check, check. Oh, let's see now. Our symptom schedule says we have a treatment for that. We have a treatment. Oh, we don't have a treatment for this, so we don't diagnose that one. Break down the word diagnostic. What's a dyad? It's two. An agnostic is somebody who doesn't know. Diagnostic. Is there a healing conversation there? Well, no, we have a pill for you. And There's absolutely a place for that. Treatment can be powerful and save a life. Treatment can't heal a life, however. It's up to the life to heal itself. Yeshua said clearly what he was here for. I come to bring you life. If you put that theory into your mind, and that theory only, what he's here for, you will hear him in a whole different way. Context in a whole different way. And the science says the theory you have about a thing determines what you can observe. If you enter into a conversation about or with Yeshua or his words in that book, and people are slogging you about doctrine and dogma and sinners and mind crap that's been promulgated down through the years as his teaching, if it's not bringing you life more abundantly, it's not fulfilling the purpose he came for. It's fulfilling the purpose of somebody else, perhaps. You know, when you start thinking about, we're at the point where we've got 32,000 sects of so-called Christianity. Why? Well, everybody's got different doctrine, different dogma. Okay, cool. So we don't have a doctor nor a dogma. Have one. He wasn't here to give it to us. What he came for was to teach us a tool with which to have life, or a set of tools, and have it more abundantly. And that's what we're here to do, too. So, Miss Jeannie, we've got about 30. Oh, great. Let's say hello. Sweet.
I believe it's Miss Susan, 610. You're on the air.
Hey, guys.
Hey, young lady. Did you get that corrected commitment I sent you? I apologize. I sent the incorrect one to you in the first email.
That's fine, and I did. Thank you so much.
Good. Good.
You helped us, my daughter and me, very much the other day dealing with Jacob, who is acting out tremendously, and we're trying to love him out of it and also give him some strict guidelines. And I could use a little more help, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, the first piece of input I'd have, just listening to your words, is you got to stop trying to love that kid. And you got to stop his mother from trying to love him. That's a huge, huge mistake. And we'll tend to create more trauma for him, for you, for mom. Let's imagine I'm going to build a house. And I have a set of blueprints. And somebody comes along in the night and changes several of the significant lines on my blueprint. And tomorrow I go to build a house. I look at the blueprint and I follow the lines. What happens? My house falls down. My offering is that something I learned from Aria, and I've shared this on the show before, that at 3 and a half she has taught me what my job was as a father, and I would offer your job as a grandmother and your daughter's job as a mother. What she's taught me is that my job is to function as love and to recognize her only as love. And in resonating, strengthening that part of her, which I can only do from that part of me, I can help incarnate being, incarnate love, who she is, into her form and into our world. But if I think that I'm supposed to do something, whatever the world's definition of, I'm going to love you, I'm going to verb you to life, it doesn't work. I have to get the blueprint right. And the blueprint, my offering is, the blueprint is, first and foremost, I need to be functioning as the true being that, if I want him to function as the true being he is, I need to be functioning as the true being I am. But if my blueprint's off and I'm saying, well, see, now I'm going to love him, the verb, I'm going to try and do this to him, my blueprint is in la-la land. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes, I think maybe I might have gotten everything wrong.
No, it isn't about wrong. It's just about keep doing the upgrades as we work through. Remember that your grandson is an extension of your genes, and you're an extension of 1,000 generations of genes. Nothing your generations have ever done has been wrong. Perhaps it's been sin. Perhaps it's been off the mark. But when you buy that label of wrong, then you're probably going to pass that label of wrong on to your grandson. And maybe you passed it on to your daughter, who's passing it on to her son. And maybe it's time to remove that label and, to apply some forgiveness around this idea of, oh, here, I did it wrong again, because that's probably one of the family patterns and one of the things that creates the kind of pain that, drives people kind of crazy and drives them to drink and drug. So I'd support you, this is a perennial issue that's come up several times for you, and so it'll probably come up several times for Jacob. And as you heal that in you, then you'll be able to be the presence of love to hold the space for him to work through what you're also working on, because I could just about guarantee he's working on the same issues you are. Except he had a little bit of a boost with a parent that was in a pretty rough place. So my offering would be to let go of the label, an old label you have for yourself of wrong, again, and maybe do some worksheets to free yourself of that one. And as you do, you'll open an energy window for Jacob to be freed of it as well. And then, instead of having to effort being something, doing something that you can't do, you'll be able to stand in being undistracted by your own mental constructs, undistracted by your own perceptual construct of self. You know, if you think about what I opened the show with, this role that we're assigned, you know, it's like we're supposed to fulfill it because that's what the family system says. And it's time, you know, you go back and you hear Yeshua saying, you can't follow me if you're not going to leave your father and your mother and your family. And people go, oh, my God, do you mean I have to move out of the house? No, got nothing to do with that. He's saying I have to give up the familial constructs based in hostility and fear. I have to forgive those things. I have to leave that in order to really have the brain cells and the comprehension, the understanding of what he was saying and what he was teaching. So to follow him, I'm going to have to give up everything based in hostility, fear, self-deprecation, deprecation of others. And at each stage, as I upgrade and get clear about what it's like, I'm going to realize, boy, that last stage was pretty raunchy. But it was, you know, if you go to the creation story in Aramaic, where, you know, the story says, this God created this and said it was good, and God created that and said it was good, and God created this and said it was good. The word good there isn't good, bad, as we generally want to do it. I did it right, wrong, good, bad. Actually, it says it's in, that word is in its proper place, in its proper time. So what today, in your state of understanding and awareness, you might look at and label something you did yesterday as quote-unquote wrong, it was good. It was in its proper place. You were right on track. If you make it, if you fall into the family pattern of making it bad or wrong, or yourself bad or wrong, then you'll just replicate what happened yesterday. When you can recognize that what you did yesterday was perfect, and now it's a new day, and you got a new level of life and a new level of aliveness, and man, I wouldn't do that thing I did yesterday in a million years, but it was good. It was perfect in its time because that's how I got here. And as I'm able to acknowledge that, and I'll see that what, you know, in today's mind, in today's understanding might look absolutely awesome. Tomorrow it might look like, oh, man, why would I ever have done that? But it was in its proper place. So breathing with you on all of that, because breathing is what allows whatever's resonated to move through and out of the system. Life. The vision is so to bring Michael, life. Yes, ma'am.
I took your commitment sheet and reworked it with Jacob in mind, knowing what would give him the barfs, what would do work that would trigger him.
Sure.
And I wrote him my commitment sheet, commitment to him, and then wrote him a letter about what we're going to do about, I know I'm getting very practical here, but we're on that level, I'm afraid,
yeah.
He and I.
Let's go for it. Absolutely. I'm with you, 100%.
So I don't know if you want to hear the commitment sheet. It doesn't, I mean, it's the same idea, but it's in words that I thought he
yes,
could
please.
Hear.
Please share it with us because there are other people who are working with young people that have different brain cells and it might just click something, especially following up what we did with it yesterday.
Okay, do you want me to send it to you or do you want me to
sure,
send it?
Please. Yes. I think both would be awesome.
Okay. Okay. I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth. I commit to always being kind to you, nurturing you, and treating you lovingly, gently, and with respect in my thoughts, word, and deeds, whether in your presence or not.
Hmm.
In every interaction, do you want to say something?
No, no, I was just enjoying it, just, you know, humming along with it.
Oh, good. I hope you keep humming. Here we go. In every interaction, I commit to affection for you and to look for and acknowledge the highest and best in you. My connection to God, because he is quite devout, so my connection to God, my relationship with you, and the maintaining of peace between us will always be more important than any issue. If anything unlike love comes up, I will step back and take the time to listen to my highest, most loving wisdom so that I can remain responsible for my own realities. I am here for you and with you. If we honor each other in this way, then whatever is painful in our lives, from our past as well as what may be happening right now, can be healed and we can grow. That's the commitment.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Right on track. Please send me a copy. We'll put it on the website.
Okay.
I mean, literally, I can see, I will put it on the website, so it will be available in the app, and it will be, you know, the commitment in the language from grandma to grandson. So, you know, you're not the only grandmother, I'm sure, that's working with a grandchild that's being a challenge.
All
and
right.
So I think that's perfect.
So then can I read you the letter I wrote to him? Because this is where I might have been on track or not, and I'd love your input.
Sure.
Okay, and I'm talking to him, but not targeting just him, because it happens with all three of my daughter's sons. I start the letter, at various times, all three of you boys allow yourselves to use harsh, abusive language toward your mom. No matter the reason, that kind of language is unacceptable. It doesn't matter where it came from or whoever you learned it from. It is unacceptable. It is never acceptable. It is well known that the person who is abusive, who treats another cruelly or harshly, is in pain and needs help. All the stuff I got from you, Michael, so shut up about it. It also is also... It is also true that the abuser gets the first hit, as such rage and ugliness damages the abuser's own cells and psyche before it damages anyone else's. So for purely selfish reasons, please never speak like that to anyone again.
Beautiful.
And then it gets even more. Thanks, Michael. And then it
that
gets
is
into
powerful.
The practical. Well, again, it's your teaching distilled for a boy. So,
well, that's what I'm loving about it, and my next request is that you send that letter along with permission for us to publish that side by side with the commitment on the website, because that's the conversation. You know, I mean, you've got the real brain cells to take it into the actual world with the young man today that you know is powerfully done from a lot of work and a lot of experience. So.
Well, it has been a lot of experience. That's true. Jake, I know we changed your allowance from a free weekly gift to a business arrangement. The deal was that you would attend choir rehearsals and services and that you would do things around the house to earn your allowance. You were upset that I would attach a value onto the household chores, as you said you do tons of things around the house anyway. And that is entirely as it should be. A housemate getting free room and board would naturally pitch in willingly and cheerfully as a partial payment for the privilege of having such a great arrangement. I will now add that if you fail to do any of these things, and Michael, this was your suggestion, and it made a lot of sense to me. I will now add that if you fail to do any of these things, attend the services and rehearsals, help around the house, and speak respectfully to your mom, the allowance will be entirely cut. There will be no going part way on this. It will be all or nothing. And mind you, hang on, because I did modify it later, but this was the first letter I got to him. I know
right.
you are under pressure, and I have been through, and have been through a great deal. I know, too, that giving up using any of the substances that provided relief to you is a huge change and can be very hard, feeling almost as if you have given up a lover.
Can I interrupt here? Let me throw in a thought while it's
sure.
fresh.
Yeah.
You shared with him the idea of how he's offending his own tissue structure with his
yeah.
hostility toward his mom. I
yeah.
think it would be beneficial to tie in right here that that's one of the ways he keeps himself under pressure. That's self-terrorism that we've been talking about the last day or two.
Oh, right. That's great. Let me make myself a note.
Yeah.
Got it.
You know, the way it fleshes out when it looks like he's doing it to mom, he gets the original. It's his own tissue
yeah.
structure that he's putting on alert and terrorizing.
Yeah, great. I love it.
And keeping himself under pressure with that.
So should I go on?
Please. Yep.
Okay, I know you are under pressure and have been going through a great deal. I know, too, that giving up using any of the substances that provided relief to you is a huge change and can be very hard, feeling almost as if you have given up a lover or have had air sucked right out of your lungs. I take all this into account, but mistreating others, not helping, not meeting your commitments at church will hurt you first of all. It will contribute to your not feeling good about yourself. This arrangement will help get you right back on your feet so that school and career will seem a happy prospect rather than something scary. You will surely say that I am punishing you, which he has said. I want you to know that I am loving you the best way I know how. So though it might feel like not what you want, it comes from the huge unconditional love that I have for you and will always have no matter what you do. Love, Orb. So then he writes back. This is the sentence he writes back. She insulted me first today, so this does not make sense. How do you like that?
Well, what he's doing here is he's begging you to discipline him. Putting the word discipline in its rightful context, to properly teach
yeah.
him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would see that as a perfect place to open the next level of conversation. Well, son, as I said, somebody who does that sort of stuff is in pain. Do you suppose
yeah.
that over some of the interactions you have had with your mother, or maybe the interactions you've seen your mother have with your dad, might be leaving her in some pain? So who now gets big enough to become the healer and step up with love rather than just vengeance, rather than just, you know, tit for tat?
Right.
So it's a perfect opening for true discipline.
So that's what happened, I hope. I mean, I wrote back, and then I wrote back again today, because today is allowance day, and I'm not sending it yet.
Right.
So I wrote back and said, please, Mr. Boone, his middle name is Boone, and that's an affectionate name, work with me.
Right.
Don't just blow this off. What is happening now is not sustainable. No, your mom is not perfect, and she's struggling, working too hard, spread far too thin. She knows you are having your own huge challenges. No one denies that. Please take some time to think about what I said. I am sure that if she said something bad to you, you can talk it out. Same with anything I might say to you. Do not shut us out. Please, please, please. Love you forever, Orb. Okay, that was yesterday.
Beautiful. Go ahead.
Well, I haven't had a word with him, but his mom said that as a result of my interchange with him, he did a whole bunch of chores around the house. Then he drove out ostensibly to go to his AA meeting and went to a liquor store, bought liquor, and got drunk. Came home drunk. So
yeah.
He's giving her both messages.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, remember when truth shows up, stress goes up. My take would be that, you know, a next level conversation with him, you know, when he says mom attack, might be, well, do you see this paragraph I wrote to you? And repeat the commitment that you made to him. And let him know that as a result of the conflicts that you and he have had, this is, you know, you could come from a mindset of being pissy, just like he likes to be on occasion. And you just bounce off of each other and let him know this is your effort to open a space for healing for him and for you. And then, you know, perhaps he could, you know, share the commitment with his mom that you made to him and see if maybe they could negotiate an arrangement where they make a commitment to each other to change the family dynamic, because the family dynamic isn't very pretty. No, this is, an opportunity to discipline him, to properly teach him. To, you know, I mean, at his age, with what he's been through, who modeled for him the option of, gee, you know, I could return a kind word for this angry word or this pained word that hasn't been happening.
Exactly.
And so, you know, inviting him to become the healer in the family, and not in the sense of taking care of or fixing anybody else, but bringing forward an understanding of some tools and a way to do it differently. And, you know, you might point out that, you know, you've been learning to do this for, you know, just a few decades more than he has, and, you know, point out and notice that you haven't gotten it all perfect yet. And he doesn't have to have it all perfect today, but he's making huge progress. And, you know, when truth shows up, stress goes up. And when stress goes up, if somebody doesn't have the tools to get rid of the stress, they run for their anesthetic, and it sounds like exactly what he did.
Right. So, but I'm encouraged by what you say, because I think I did a good thing. I'll imagine that.
I think it's beautifully done.
Thanks. Well, I wrote a follow-up letter today because the deal on his allowance, I spelled it out even more, and I won't go into it, but there are four requirements. Remain sober from all substances, and I said, I know I'm adding this on, but recent events show me that this needs to be added.
Absolutely.
And then household chores, speak with respect and attend your programs and do your jobs. Then you'll get your allowance.
And you know, it would be reasonable to put in there, and I reserve the right to, you know, negotiate another shift in if we need it, and I offer you the same right. You know, treating them as an equal, and that things are there to be fair, to be an incentive, and to bring healing into his life and into your whole family's life.
I like that. I'm going to do that. So I want you to hear this, Michael, because it's really like what you just told me to do. I already did it. Yay! It is, in addition, please read my commitment that I wrote to you in the previous letter. It would be ideal if you would read it every single day. It may seem barfy and ridiculous at first, but if you take in what I say in there and do likewise to others, I guarantee your whole life will change for the better. You will be a much happier and productive fellow. You have so much going for you, but anger and fear seem to be eclipsing your seeing this at the moment. Believe in yourself, Mr. Boone. You are a total treasure, and you are the only one who seems not to know it. All my love, Orb.
Beautiful. That's really powerful.
Thanks to you. Yep.
Powerful. Now, you say he's devout. What does devout mean?
Well,
in the context of his life.
Well, it's true. He was brought up in the church, and I know how you feel about some of the darker side of the church, but his mom is one amazing, open-minded, wonderful priest, and she has been as good of a model within the church structure as I can imagine. And I don't just say as she has, I won't go in, as she's just been tremendously effective as a priest for bringing people into her church and teaching them dialogue, open-mindedness, flexibility, loving, holding a loving stance toward everything, so on and so forth. And he grew up with that. And at times he has said to me, when he's in his best mind, he says, my mom is amazing. And I do count on God. I just do. I'm so glad my mom taught me about God. So whatever that means, I'm not sure, but he's got it in there somewhere.
Right. Well, the reason I ask that question is that I notice in your writing to him, you're not making any reference to scripture or what have you. And you might, you know, if he's got that devout streak in him, and, you know, sometimes it's latent and sometimes it's out there, it might be good to tie into, you know, like, for instance, the commitment, you know, and, you know, you might not necessarily at this stage change to the Aramaic, because it is power in the context of this kind of conversation, quote unquote, loving your neighbor as the world thinks of love. You know, that's a whole big piece of teaching that he's going to have to get at some point. But, you know, for instance, pointing out to him the fact that the commitment that you wrote to him is your way of expressing your care and concern and doing exactly what Yeshua said in, you know, whatever the scriptural quote is in Matthew, blah, 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 love your neighbor, that this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And then that might, you know, that might key in with some of the brain cells he's got for, oh yeah, that was the directive, wasn't it? And then, you know, so how could you express that? If you want to bring that devoutness into your actual life, how can you express that towards your mother? What would your commitment look like? Base it on mine, or I'll work with you and help you to develop one, and or, you know, I'll work with you and your mom if you want to develop one that really works and opens a space for communication and nurturing each other.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
And, you know, teach him about thought disorders and anything that is not loving that his mind thinks is a thought with which he's either going to terrorize and inflict pain on himself, or terrorize or inflict pain on others. And that's totally out of harmony with his devout nature. And he wants to bring that forward. He's got, as all of us has, he's got the ego nature, you know, the non-being mind. And, you know, that's his battle right now. And, you know, the fact that you've done so much work, you're perfectly placed, and you have such a connection with him, you're perfectly placed to facilitate him moving to the next level of, you know, getting out of the cultural mind of hostility and fear that so many kids are in.
Yeah, they are, more than ever.
Oh, it's tragic. It's tragedy.
Yeah, it's scary, and it's all on, it's in the culture, it's in the political arena, and it's on the internet, just everywhere. And they're on.
Massive.
He does have a really good theater job where he's teaching little kids, and he's evidently very good at it. And he's also, he's got the lead in a musical down there. And when he slips into that, he's like a healed person. He's like Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, he's just totally okay. So,
well, which persona is active?
Yeah.
And, you know, when children are abused, they tend to compartmentalize their minds and separate out. And, you know, it sounds like he's gone through some significant abuse. And so, and from what you're saying, there's a good possibility that he has some of what might even be diagnosable multiple personality disorder.
Oh, yeah.
And
it could be. And he's also heavily medicated. So it's hard to get a read. He's sleepy all the time.
Yeah. down through the years, you know, the one consistent piece of information that I've got from people in the realm of psychology is the worksheet's the only thing they've seen that integrates multiple personalities. And when you, you know, there might be a safe way to open a conversation like that. It's like, you know, Jacob, sometimes I find myself in this persona, and I in the Greek word mask, explain that to him. This persona that I've got going is angry and upset and, you know, self-condemning or, you know, whatever descriptors you give it. And there's a part of me, you know, when you started throwing some of that stuff back to me, that angry stuff you had going on, that wanted to get into that. And the commitment I wrote to you is me trying to heal my thought disorders to come out of that, because that's not where I want to live. I want to live in a space of gentleness, respect, and care and concern with you. And I know you want that with me when you're in the real Jacob. But when you're not, you need a ladder to climb out. And that's what this commitment is a ladder to climb out of those thought disorders.
Mm. That's great. That's really good. I've taken notes. Thank you, Michael. I'm going to put these to use.
Well, I am honored and delighted, and please, if it works for you, of course, the names will be changed to protect the guilty. but if you'd use some of these communications you'd share with us, and I'd love to put them on the website, you know, as an example for here's how one grandmother, and, you know, maybe privately, if you wanted to, you could be identified. If someone needs help with that specific situation, there might be someone who, you know, reads that and goes, how do I get in touch with this person? How do I get advice here? Then, you know, through us, or if you wanted to be publicly noted on the website, that might not be a good idea. But in any event, I just see it being a really powerful road. You know, you're hoeing the road for healing between the elder generation and the kids today, and that's just so desperately needed. So I hope to be privy to all those communications, and with permission to publish them, names redacted.
Thanks. I will put them together and send them along.
I appreciate it.
And
that's
I can't
awesome.
Thank you enough, because we just haven't had the words, and you give us the words, and then we get a footing and we're going ahead. And I haven't heard from him, so say a prayer.
Well, we hold the space and just see the openings happening, and thank you for what you're doing. Millions yet unborn are going to be touched by it.
Well, that would be nice. Thanks so much, Michael.
All right, we appreciate you. Blessings. And everybody, thank you for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation. I think it's awesome for you to step up to the plate, Susan, with this work you're doing with your grandson. It's just fabulous, and we appreciate you. Everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.